We're going to go to class today. I'm an educator. So students, you are Oklahoma Wesleyan University students for the next 25 to 30 minutes. Now, if you pay attention and if you pass the quiz at the end of this, I may actually grant you some college credit. That's if you're willing to pay for it, of course. Now, seriously, what we're going to do is we're going to go through a quick overview of a talk that I call, a lecture that I call, God is God and You're Not. We've spent the last couple days talking, yesterday, and we will do today. So the last day and now today, we're talking about worldview. We're talking about who God is and who we are within the context of a worldview. And what I want you to think about today is, who is God? Who is God? How do you view Him? How do you see Him? How do you understand Him? How does He communicate with you? And what do you believe about God? I would argue with you students that God is God, I'm not, and neither are you. Now let's take a walk down memory lane. Okay? For those of you who are a little younger than me, you need to learn something about good music. For those of you who are my age or older, this is good stuff. All right? Jason, would you please play the first clip, the Carly Simon clip? Now, you may want to get, now if you're, again, my age or older, you're going to need to get your lighters out and wave them back and forth. If you're younger than me, get your cell phone out and wave it back and forth. Listen to this song. Remember that song? All right. This has nothing to do with anything this morning, but who was that? Carly Simon. Now, other trivia. Who was she singing the song to or about? Come on, help me out, old folks. Come on. Who was she singing the song to or about? Come on, you gotta speak up. I hear some people whispering. Mick Jagger, that's one possibility. She may have been singing to Mick Jagger or about him. Who else was she singing about? Her ex-husband? No, not at the time. James Taylor is a possibility. Warren Beatty is another possibility. And you know what? To this day, no one knows, because she's kept the secret, except for one person. You see, a couple years ago, at auction, she sold the secret for $50,000, high bidder. And she only told the secret to the winning bid if the guy would sign a contract promising not to disclose the information until she's dead. So we still don't know. Mick Jagger doesn't know, Warren Beatty doesn't know, James Taylor doesn't know for sure, but somebody out there paid $50,000 to buy the secret. Somebody's got too much money on their hands. You're so vain, I bet you think this song is about you, don't you? Don't you? Don't you? One more time. With one eye in the mirror as you watch yourself, what? That's really not what she says. I always thought that too. Gavotte. What does gavotte mean? To strut, to preen, to prance. You're so vain, I bet you think this song is about you. With one eye in the mirror as you watch yourself cavat, as you watch yourself strut by and preen and prance, arrogantly through life, you and I are so vain, we think this song is about us. God is God. You're not. Do you remember the story of Narcissus. I'm going to take you back to your junior high Greek mythology for a second. Narcissus was the son of the Greek god Cephissus. And if you remember the story, he was one of the most beautiful and handsome of all the gods. And as he would play and dance and run through the forests of Greece, along the foothills of Mount Olympus, he would run through the flowers and dance through the fields. And one day as he was doing that, he stumbled across a cool stream. In the crook of the stream, there was a pool. And he knelt over to get a drink. And what did he see? He saw his own reflection. And he was kneeling there beside the pool in the Greek woods. He was so mesmerized by his own beauty. He thought to himself, you know, not even Zeus and Bacchus are as handsome and beautiful as me. As he dipped his hands into the pool, gazing at his own reflection, he fell in and he drowned. And if you listen, class, listen real close. If you listen, to this day, you can hear the tree nymph that was named Echo, pining after the loss of such great beauty. Listen, do you hear? Mourning the loss of Narcissus. Narcissus. Narcissism. Narcissistic. What do those words mean? Love of self. We're so vain that we think this song is about us. As human beings, we're just like Narcissus. We gaze into the pool of our own reflection. We fall in love with it, thinking we're God. And in doing so, we fall over, drowned, and die, as eternity mourns the loss of another human heart and soul. Doesn't that describe your culture, guys? The culture in which we live? We focus more on man and our own face and our own love affair with self than we do on God and his sovereignty and his grace. And we come up with these ideas all the time because we're so in love with self, and we end up being a mess and dying at our own hand on a daily basis. Yesterday we talked about worldview and some of these ideas that we come up with that are really quite ugly. They're not beautiful. We suffer at our own hand. I brought up several examples. I'm going to give you a couple more right now. One of the examples of a love affair with self is the academy, the college and university setting in which I work. Many of you have either attended one, or you've sent kids to a university, or you're thinking of going to a university. Well, here's some of the stuff that takes place in colleges and universities today. Guys, have you ever heard of the guy named Peter Singer? You ever heard of the guy named Peter Singer? Well, Peter Singer is one of the primary ethicists in our nation today. He's a guy that studies ethics. He's a guy that teaches ethics. He is one of the gentlemen that will be quoted in many of the discussions and the debates today on what's ethical and what's not. He's a professor at Princeton, one of the best institutions in the land. He's very bright. Dr. Singer is one of the sharpest guys out there. You see, Dr. Singer specializes in bioethics. And today he makes this claim. Because he's in love with an idea that's come out of his own mind called radical Darwinism, he believes that one organism is no different than another. The human being is no better than any other biological mass, and therefore we should stop imposing our morality on other organisms. Therefore, he draws no distinction today between sexual behavior of one kind versus sexual behavior of another. It's an amoral discussion. And if there's no difference between one biological mass versus another, human versus a dog, a pig, a cat, a cow, then there's nothing wrong with interspecies sex. Did you hear what I just said? One of the premier ethicists of our nation at the University of Princeton argues that interspecies sexual behavior is okay. We're so vain, we think the song is about us, don't we? Peter Singer is in love with self to the point where he can come up with an idea that I think is so absurd and dangerous that he preaches that, teaches that to his students that are 18, 19, and 20 years old. Dr. Singer also argues that the quality of life is more important than the definition of life. And who defines that quality? Well, he does. And the elite academics of our day. He argues that if a child is born and that quality of life is questionable upon birth, then it's okay to perform what is called a post-birth abortion. Do you follow me on that? Meaning, you kill the baby after it's born because his quality of life is now questionable. He has cerebral palsy. He has multiple sclerosis. He has Down syndrome. She doesn't have the ability to live a quality of life that Singer and the elites define as being good enough for existence. So post-birth abortion is okay. You guys should be shocked by this. You should be shaking your heads and wondering, where did these ideas come from? And why are they acceptable to some people today? Another example, I used it in our seminar yesterday, is Eric Pianca. Eric Pianca is a professor at the University of Texas. He received an award last year. He was declared the Scientist of the Year by the Texas Academy for Science. When he stepped forward to the podium, like I'm talking to you today, he had to give an acceptance speech for getting this particular award. He said this: "Thank you for my award. I appreciate it. As scientists gathered here today, we know we've got a problem. You see, the Earth is dying, and we know it. The Earth is in trouble. And we have to do something to correct this. We have to decrease the problem organism by at least 95%, otherwise the Earth will die. And the problem organism is humanity. You see, we have overpopulation, and as the result of this overpopulation, the environment is in trouble. A 95% reduction in the human population is necessary immediately, and euthanasia will not take care of the problem quickly enough. Abortion will not address the problem quickly enough. Birth control is not the solution. It'll take too long. Something akin to the Ebola virus needs to take place and prevail if the Earth is to be saved." Guys, I'm not making this stuff up. Do you want to ask Dr. Pianca, would you prefer to be in the 95% or the 5%? And oh, by the way, who's going to decide who's in which group? Now, when he was challenged later, he said, "Well, I was just exaggerating the point to make a point. It was hyperbole." But I have this question. If his worldview is grounded in radical Darwinism, if human beings are nothing but the product of a primordial ooze, if you and I are just happenstance and products of chance, then why would we have any moral significance that's any higher or better than anything else? We don't. We're not created by God in his image. We're just products of radical Darwinism, radical evolutionary processes. We just sprung out of the mess like the Ebola virus did. So why do you have any more right to exist than Ebola does? You don't. You have no moral significance over and above any other thing that's alive. Do you? Do you realize that just in the last couple weeks, and I'm not making this stuff up, you guys are looking at me like, is he? No, I'm not crazy. Just last week, the Swiss government, I mean, it might have been 2 weeks ago, just last couple weeks, the Swiss government issued a statement about plant rights. Go Google it. The Constitution of the Swiss government calls for plant rights. They had a special panel within their parliament to discuss what plant rights are and aren't. And you see, a plant has just as much right to exist. It has rights just like a human being does or a cow does. They talked about decapitation of plants. Now, this is farm country. I would think that you would think, whoa, 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 wait a second here. When I go out and mow my field, am I guilty of murdering wheat or grass? When I'm participating in harvest, am I somehow participating in an immoral activity? Guys, this is crazy. And why are we in this mess? We're in this mess right now is because we're so vain, we think this song is about us. We make up these ideas as we go along. We commit the original sin. It's just like what Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden. What is the point of that story? When God says, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, why does he say that? Why is that bad? That always confused me. Why is it wrong for us to go eat a fruit that will give us knowledge of good and evil, knowledge of what is right and wrong? Why did God tell us not to do that? You have the answer for me? I would think he'd want us to know what's good and evil, right and wrong. Well, here's the moral to that story. The reason is found in Satan's temptation. When he went to Eve and he said, take of the fruit and eat it, because in doing so, you will be as God, knowing what's good and evil. You will be God. You will decide. You will know. You will define. You can be the arbiter of all. You don't need God anymore because you're as God. You can make it up. And your vanity, as you watch yourself cavat, you can make it up. Peter Singer, Eric Pianca, make up the rules as you go, just like Adam and Eve did. Do you get it? The focus is on you and your own reflection and your love affair with self. It's not on God. And it's very dangerous and ugly. I'd like to play another song for you. I've got two more points I want to point out. It's another song from the 70s. Jason, are you ready? This is the second one. Go ahead, forget that one. Okay? I'd sing it for you, but you and I, you won't appreciate that. Can you sing the song? Do you remember, this is a 1970s song. It's the context for what I want to say, so you've got to try to remember it. Do you remember Lobo in the 1970s? L-O-B-O? It's kind of, huh? Lobo was the group. Okay? Do you remember me and you and a dog named Boo traveling and living off the land? Me and you and a dog named Boo, how I love being a free man? Okay, now some of you remember that song. 1970s, right along with Carly Simon. Now let me say it again. Me and you and a dog named Boo traveling and living off the land. Me and you and a dog named Boo, how I love being a free man. No. That's the wrong one, Jason. I'll go ahead. Now, here's what I want you to think of here. This is the lesson of Blue. Now, I've got a black Labrador at home. And her name is Blue. Now, the reason she's named Blue is because I mistook Lobo's song for saying blue, not boo. So I've got a black dog that's named Blue because I thought that Lobo was saying blue, not boo. So it's very confusing, so just stick with me a second here, okay? I want to talk to you about the lesson of Blue. And you guys should understand this. Many of you have animals. I've learned something watching my animal. I've learned something watching Blue. It's the lesson of freedom. You see, I've learned that my dog Blue is only free when she starts listening to me. You see, if I have not done my job in teaching her where the boundaries of the yard are and who the master is, Blue has to be put on a chain or put in a cage or confined in the backyard because she'll run away. She'll go run across the road. She'll get hit. She'll get killed. But when Blue listens to the master and starts obeying what I say, paying attention to the boundaries that I've defined, what can I do with the dog? I can let her run free. See, it's the paradox of discipline and freedom. We are only free when we understand where the boundaries are. If we live our life as if there are no boundaries and nobody defines them other than us, we're just like my dog. We run crazy. We do dangerous things. We break rules that were there for our own good and our own protection. And as the result of running wild and following our animal instincts, what happens to us? We get sick. We get diseases. We get hurt. We break relationships. We get run over by the truck in the middle of the highway and we die. It's the paradox of discipline and freedom. The dog is free when the dog is disciplined. The dog isn't free. She's on a chain. She's in a pen. She's in a cage when she isn't disciplined to obey the master's voice. The lesson of Blue. When she thinks she's God, she's in danger. When she recognizes that I am in charge, she's free. It's the same principle for us, guys. Let me use another story to drive that point home. This one's the lesson of Bruce. I just told you the lesson of Blue, the paradox of discipline and freedom, that Blue is only free when she understands the rule of the master. Let me share with you the lesson of Bruce. I have a brother. His name is Bruce. He's a good guy. Nice guy. Nicest guy in the world when he's sober. You see, Bruce has some trouble with addiction. He's a Vietnam vet, and he's a 1960s child. He's out of the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and the Carly Simon and the Lobo era, and he enjoyed the 60s and the 70s to their fullest. You see, he lived free. He was free indeed. He cast off any confines of Christianity, and he viewed religion as being nonsense. It didn't have any sense. He viewed the freedoms of the 60s as being his God and his way of life, and he practiced that to his fullest. And as you fast forward today, he has the predictable consequences in his life of living that way. He has some addictions. One of them is alcohol. Well, one night a couple years ago, Bruce got drunk and he became angry with his wife. And he tried to burn the house down with her in it. Well, she didn't like that very much. So she called the police. She had him arrested. And every Thursday afternoon at 1:45 in Hillsdale, Michigan, that summer I would drive down to visit my brother. And he would be in his orange jail fatigues on one side of a plate glass window, and I would be in my suit and tie on the other. And from 1:45 to 2 o'clock, we'd talk. because that's the only time he could, because he wasn't free to do anything else at any other time. Now, I want to ask you a question. 1:45 on Thursday afternoons, who was free? Who was free? Was it the Christian who had decided to live his life within the borders and boundaries and confines of the rules of God? Or was it the 1960s, 70s child that enjoyed all the quote-unquote freedom of that era? Who was free at 1:45? Do you understand what I'm saying? When we break the rules, we end up getting put in cages. When we don't know where the boundaries are and we start acting like we're God, we have to be put on a chain and confined. Literally. Just like my brother. It's the paradox of discipline and freedom. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And no one comes to the Father but by me, said Jesus. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free, said Jesus. Well, if he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father but by me, then there must be a way, a truth, and a life, right? And that way, truth, and life is not defined by you or me. We don't make it up as we go. We don't gaze in the pool and fall in love with self and make it up. We are not the definers of good and evil. God is. And when we recognize that, freedom comes. We get out of the jail of our own making, and we can live in the beauty and grandeur of God's blessing and his grace. Jason, could you play the Simon song again? Carly Simon. As we conclude, well, you did it five times a minute ago, so it's probably okay now. As we conclude, I want you to listen to Carly Simon one more time. Listen to this. That's okay. Keep it going. You're so vain. I bet you think the song is about you. With one eye in the mirror, as we watch ourselves come out. Listen to this. It's a theme song for our culture. We're so vain that we think the song is about us. Guys, it's not about us. The only way that we can live a life that's fulfilled and free is to acknowledge that God is God and we're not. The lesson of Blue: my dog is free when she listens to the master. The lesson of Bruce: we're in a cage when we fail to listen to our master. Worldview matters. Truth matters. Ideas matter. The ideas of Peter Singer and Eric Pianca will lead us to a hell of our own making, guys. Look at the lessons of history. Pol Pot and the killing fields. Mao and the Cultural Revolution. Stalin and the Gulag. Hitler and Auschwitz. Robespierre, the French Revolution, and the guillotine. Time and time again, when man starts making up his own rules, we suffer the loss of freedom or the loss of life. We're not God. Pray with me. Heavenly Father, be with us. I pray that we honor you in everything we do and we stop looking at ourselves. In your name, amen.